Good morning, everyone. Yesterday began the festival of Ganesh Chaturthi, dedicated to Lord Ganesha. And I was rereading a book, Nisargadatta Maharaj's, called The Earliest Discourses. And there is a short chapter on Ganpati and the relevance of Ganpati with Advaita. So I will read out a few lines in honor of Ganpati. This here is Ganpati. Most Indians are familiar with the form. The vision of Ganpati is the most auspicious. If you have his vision first, then all other things are transformed from inauspicious to auspicious. Whenever there's any counting, the one who counts has to be present first. For counting, any personalities, however great, there should be the presence of the Atman first. If we are absent, then who will count? The self must be present to begin the counting. When there is the beginning of manifestation from the unmanifested, there is the appearance of Ganpati. In this body, your existence is due to Atman, God or Ganpati. With his vision and after developing intimacy with him, there's an all-round well-being. He gives life to all existence and is present in all as Atman. Remove your ignorance that the body is your shape and make room for Ganpati to occupy your heart. What is needed is conviction and nothing more. I am telling you something very profound. The self is difficult to realize, for which the Guru's words are helpful. The conviction will save one, and that one will save others. Develop conviction about what you have heard now. This will be your direct experience and bliss, which will be unknown to others. Today, I would like to go through a short meditation on the word surrender. So, there may be things you resonate with, things that you may not. I myself don't know what will be said because this is not something prepared. There may be gaps, there may not. But surrender. Or rather, true surrender is intrinsic to life's journey. So, do relax. If you want to close your eyes, you may close them, keep them open, you may keep them open. There are no rules for this meditation. Surrender is our natural state. To understand this, let's keep aside the baggage of conditioning associated with the word surrender. Feelings that perhaps give rise to thoughts of being dominated, being subservient, and so on. Let's look at surrender in its pure form, as one's natural state. Now, when the baby is born, which is all of us, the natural state of the baby is one of surrender. The mother is going to provide milk to the baby. The universe is taking care of the baby. The baby has no concepts of what to accept and what to reject. And the universe provides for the baby. Then this baby, after a certain time, starts knowing that if I cry, my mother will come running. If I cry as a knowing, it sees that the mother comes running, which means if I do something, something will happen as a consequence. If I do something as a separate entity, something will happen as a result. And this starts the process, which is the birth of the ego and the birth of personal will. My will as against the will of the universe. And now the ego starts operating as the me center. This is me, and this is my story. I want things my way. This is me. This is my religion. This is my background. This is my economic status. This is my conditioning. This is my school. These are my friends. These are my family. My is the mantra of life. But the mother, the universal mother, still takes care of the child. She has not gone anywhere. Consciousness, Shakti, despite this illusion, has not exited the scene. Nature still supports us. The air we breathe, the earth we are on, manifestations of Shakti, the food we eat, and the presence of the baby, pure being, cannot leave us. Life starts happening. Pleasures and pains. And we start rejecting the pains, thinking that life should be only pleasure after pleasure after pleasure. And we avoid pain. We want to escape from it. When we are in pain, psychological pain, we start thinking of happy memories, the vacations we went on, and so on. Till we realize that this happiness, which depends on a pleasure, is a cheat. It does not last. It depends on something. To accept this, that I now know that life cannot be just pleasure, 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 and happiness that depends on that. That is the first step on the path of surrender. I now accept that the flow of life, the way life is designed, is sometimes pleasure, sometimes pain, and more likely, sometimes pleasure and many times pain. And then what happens is something quite beautiful. Now onwards, there is no turning away from the pain. There is no escaping the pain. It is accepted as the design of life. One may not prefer it, but it is accepted. That is the surrender. That acceptance is what Maharaj terms as the start of the turning away from the self, the small self, which wants to run away from that situation. This turning point goes unnoticed by many on the path, but they will now see that in their life's journey, unpleasant aspects of life, painful aspects of life, are now accepted more and more as a part of life. I may take a decision to do something about the situation, or I may just witness it. But now I find I am not running away like I used to. I have accepted. As Maharaj said, the expected seldom happens. The unexpected always does. That is the design of life. I now accept that. That is the surrender. I now accept that my realization is now that at any moment I do what I think and feel I should do. But thereafter, nothing is in my control. Why? I have seen this in my own life. Live this knowing is surrender. Now, it is becoming clearer and clearer that surrender is not an act, because an act implies doership. Surrender is a way of being. It means being surrendered to what is. And if one is truly surrendered to what is, there is peace and equanimity deep down. Yesterday, I spoke to someone who one could call as being deeply religious, steeped in practices, worship, and so on. Now, in that brief conversation on the phone, that conversation was about the current situation, the lockdown, the pandemic. And in those 10 minutes of conversation, the one word that kept repeating itself was the word horrible. This is so horrible. I feel horrible. What is happening is horrible. All the people dying is horrible. I'm frustrated sitting at home. It is horrible. Horrible, 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 horrible was the mantra being chanted for those 10 minutes, unconsciously. Now, if one accepts what is, which is horrible, that is the surrender. The thinking mind and the drama that it plays out is finished in the true state of surrender. Of course, you know it is a horrible situation, but resistance to the situation is what happens constantly, consistently, and then life's expression becomes what is chanted most in the consciousness, which is horrible. So, what can we really surrender? We are born with nothing. We leave this world with nothing. What is it that is so precious that we feel is ours and that we can surrender to God or the Almighty or consciousness? Nothing is ours. So to say, I surrender, now all this has happened to me, I give up, life is too hard, I can't handle this situation anymore, I surrender. Who is the I who thinks it can surrender? It is the ego with its sense of doership. The only surrender possible is the surrender of the sense of doership. Not my will, O Lord, but thine be done. Jesus's words are the words of absolute surrender. So you will know in your own life, if you have started accepting more and more God's will, that is already the surrendered state in operation. There is no I which has to say, I have now surrendered to God's will. In the state of being, the baby surrendered to the mother, there is no I saying, I have surrendered to the mother and to the universe to bring me milk. So it is a natural process. Surrender is a natural process on life's journey. Some meanings of the word surrender are to give back, not give up, to give back, to deliver forth That is why there is the story of Alexander when he was passing away. We don't know if it's true, but it is there. And he told his people on his deathbed, I have seen the futility of conquest. I can't take anything with me. So when I die, please see that my fists are not closed, they are open. Please see that my hands are wide open for everyone to see that the great Alexander is leaving this planet empty-handed. It took his death for him to realize that acquisition, adding to me my conquest, all the lands I have captured, taken over, are meaningless. So what all are we holding on to that we haven't already surrendered? Relationships, opinions, judgments, what all are we grasping onto so tightly? This is me and mine. Let me show you something. I hope you all can see this. What is the significance of this? The baby is already radiating pure being, the Shakti, which is behind the baby, behind all of us, is holding the baby up. This is a very profound visual. Same as Krishna, the baby Krishna. Pure I am, surrendered state, open. Incidentally, I picked this up from a cathedral in France called Chartres. Efficient. There you go. You have some powerhouses behind me now. Chartres Cathedral is about an hour and a half from Paris. It was built by the Knights Templar, the poor Knights of Christ. Originally, these knights came together to protect the poor from being robbed when they were traveling from one place to another. Now, these knights were masters of alchemy. Alchemy, which at the mundane level, you could say, is the process of converting base metal into gold. But there's a catch. And this is not what I have read in books. This is because of my meetings with a friend who is an alchemist that I have learned so much being with him. The catch is that you cannot convert base metal into gold, which is the purest metal, unless the individual consciousness of the alchemist merges with the divine consciousness. As within, so without. So the alchemist to produce gold needs to be realized. This is nature's law. Why? Because otherwise that ability can be misused. So it is through this alchemical gold that they managed to build these splendid cathedrals in France. And you will know which ones are built by the Templars because they have embedded their signs there. And there's a book called the Mutus Libra, the silent book. No words, only drawings, signs, and symbols. And the advanced alchemist, to learn the advanced art of alchemy, has no words to refer to. Pure intuition needs to operate to understand what is communicated through signs and symbols. So coming back to the surrendered state, all we can do is surrender our sense of doership. That is what has been acquired in life. True surrender is the surrender of the sense of doership that has set me up against others. The sense of doership has made me think I am in control of my life. And the divine force has been ignored. And one finds that living in the surrendered state has now automatically become less of doing, and more of being. One is now surrendered to what is here and now in this moment. Not in the dead past, not in an imaginary future, but right here, right now. Vartaman, the now. The mind is no longer involved in thinking, which is based on separation, which is based on doership. That is the gift of surrender. Even your disappointments are not yours. Even those have to be surrendered. Everything has to be surrendered. This is not a partial surrender. It is not a convenient surrender. Any emotion which arises has to be surrendered. Why? It is not your emotion. It is simply an emotion arising. And then you realize that by God's grace, there is no question, there never was any question of me surrendering, because surrender had already started happening. All right. If there's any questions or anyone wants to share something or ask something, we can take them now. Yes, Holger.
Gratitude.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you, Gautam. So beautiful. My heart is warm. It's quite amazing, your simple, unprepared meditation. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Okay.
There was always this feeling of, I need to survive. I mean, it's weird, and it doesn't really matter. It's all past. Just thank you.
You see, that is the thing, Holger. We are so caught up in thinking that we will die. The me is so afraid of its death that everything it does in life is now centered on protecting itself so it does not die. Whereas the beauty of the teaching is what I call the slow poisoning of the me, where it doesn't even realize that it's on the journey of its own death. It's so beautiful, you know. It's so beautiful because one is being healed back to the source. It is a journey of being healed back to the source.
Thank you very much.
Okay, take care.
Thank you.
Yes, Vandana.
Hi, Gautam.
Hello.
In one of your books, I read you quoted Nisargadatta Maharaj, and you said only the dead can die, not the living. Yes. What is the spiritual definition of death? How would you explain it?
Are you asking it in relation to Maharaj's quote?
Yes.
Okay. Did you read the context in which I mentioned this sentence? Only the dead can die, not the living.
Yes, I did. It is in when you visited somebody who had the old books of Maharaj and you wanted them. Right. And you were asked to quote in your book, Explosion on Love.
Yes. Okay. So, you see what? Let's keep it simple because I don't want to get abstract about this. What is real? That is what Maharaj used to ask. If everything in life is transient, coming and going, not there permanently, what is it that was there 100 years before you were born and will be there 100 years after you die? What is that? He would keep asking this question, especially in the early years. Because surely, this lifespan, this limited lifespan, is concerned with only this life. But what is this bedrock which is there 100 years before and will be there 100 years after? Which one is real? What is real? That which can have no birth nor death is real. The fact that something can have birth and death means it is unreal because it is temporary. Real is always there. So therefore, only the dead can die, not the living. What is living is the real, which is missed. What he is pointing at with this very profound statement, according to my understanding, is that which is living is eternal, means it cannot die. That is real, which he would point always at being the Paramatman, even prior to consciousness, because even I am, even being, I am, your feeling of I am, on death, you cannot feel that. You see? So the pointing is always going to the real with a capital R, which is always there. I will tell you the closest experience I have had about this. One day, I was taking a short nap and suddenly there was a full vision of a bedroom in my, you could call it dream state, and that vision started turning black. And as it started turning black, fear started arising that what is happening to me? And gradually the vision merged into all blackness. But yet, the presence was there that knew that everything is black. You see? So for me, this was a very important point on my journey because it gave me the knowing that even without me being there, I am there with a capital I. See, and that is the eternal, which does not come and go. I was given a brief glimpse of that. So what Maharaj is pointing at when he says this line is not to take you on some esoteric trip of concepts, which is very often what is done here in Jnana Yoga, to bring it back down to daily living, to show you that don't base your life, your worldview, and your way of being and living on things that don't really matter. That is what he is trying to say. You see? So is this a lived experience of Vandanas? Or is it something which has been read in the books and left there? Now, my take is that if something has appealed to you, any line, any sentence, that is because deep down in your heart, you resonate with it. And it is very beautiful. Anyone and everyone should see what appeals to them, what they have read, what has really they felt that I may not have understood this intellectually, but I'm so curious about it. Because that seed is already there. That is a very beautiful thing that happens. You see? Because that knowing is already there. That is why, as Dayanand Saraswati said, that enlightenment is not an object. All that happens is ignorance is removed. Mm-hmm. All that happens is that ignorance is removed. So it is not something to be acquired. It appears we are acquiring knowledge, but what is actually happening on this journey is that our ignorance is being peeled off layer by layer by layer by layer. That is what is happening. All that is false, all that is really unnecessary is being stripped away. That is what is happening.
Thank you for the beautiful explanation. Thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Priyam. Are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can't see you. Maybe you can come back later, Priyam.
Hello, sir, can you hear me?
Yes, I can now hear you and see you.
Okay, thank you so much for all of your videos.
You're so young.
Everything that I've learned from them. I'm so sorry if my question will sound immature, but it really means a lot to me for now. So my question is that in your videos, I have seen that you always say that do what naturally comes to you, like act according to your nature and do not really think about anything else. So my first question is, how do you truly know what your true nature is if everything you have done in your life has been just to seek approval or to get attention of other people? So now at 29, I don't really know who am I and what is my basic nature, because there was this deep childhood conditioning of being a girl child, so like not being really wanted. So materialistic desires were fulfilled, like it's like she's there, so we have to take care of her, but then always wanting their attention and love. And that led me to be this perfect good girl and good girl, meek girl at school, somebody who is always following orders. So it was just to get that attention and approval. But now almost 3 decades of my life have passed, and I don't really know that what brings me intense joy and who am I in terms of what is coming naturally to me. Because my entire life experience has been of pleasing other people and acting as they wanted me to act. So my first question is that, like, how do I be like reborn at this stage in my life? And that's my first question. And second question is, it feels like a very karmic birth to me, because almost every year of my life there has been this massive trauma. And it has been like 1 year has gone just to come out of the trauma. There has been a loss of a parent in terms of physical death. There has been a loss of parent in terms of emotional distance. There has been loss of a sibling in terms of like a very violent death. And it was like a younger brother. So for me, it was sort of like a motherly feeling, and mother losing her child, sort of the pain was so intense. It was almost dying on the operation table and coming back to life. It was, it has been betrayal, cheating, and a lot of things. Like, sometimes I feel, how can it be so karmic? Like, how horrible a person I must have been in my previous life that everyone has come now to take, to do this karmic debt I owed them. I, in fact, still now say sorry to everyone. Like, I'm so sorry I hurt you in this bad a way that it's not just ending for me. Somehow every relation, everything just ends up being a very big karmic lesson. But I'm very grateful because it has almost let me go off a lot of attachments, a lot of like materialistic attachments and everything. It is getting me in touch with my true nature. But there is still this desire of wanting a true companion, a best friend in life, sort of like a, I don't know, it sounds very romantic and idealized, but sort of like wanting to share this life experience with someone. And people tell me, they're like, you're so lucky, you have no one, you're just living alone and you don't know how hard it is. Even the people who look seemingly happily married from a distance, they tell me that you're very lucky, that you can live your life the way you want. And so I've used all this pain in my life to create paintings. So now I quit my banking job and I make paintings and I sell them to my clients. I listen to what requirements they have. Like you were talking about Ganesh Chaturthi. So I recently sent a lot of Ganesha paintings worldwide because of Ganesh Chaturthi. I have tried to use all of that pain to incorporate some beauty into other people's lives, but it's still not giving me that feeling that, yeah, this is me. This is something that is bringing me sheer joy. It is still coming out of people pleasing. So that's like my first question. And my second question was, of course, that, how do I let go of the craving of wanting a partner who's there? And because that's also coming out of the need to be loved and accepted and not finding that joy within me by myself. So those are my two questions. So sorry, I spoke so much. And thank you so much for listening.
I think you have spoken on behalf of everyone here. All that you have expressed, unfortunately, it's been heightened for you in terms of life's experiences. And I can imagine the pain and suffering. But the fact that you are aware of it, the fact that you even come on to this talk, that itself is the second birth, my dear one. It has already happened. Why? Because there are people who are suffering like you, who have been given enormous amounts of suffering, but the awareness is not there yet because that's not their destiny. The suffering will keep perpetuating and going on in ignorance. But the sheer fact that even whatever you have said, you can only say if you're aware of it. It's so beautiful because that opening, that awareness is what allows the light to shine. And death is the greatest teacher. For anyone who has lost a loved one, be it a parent, be it a child, you see how their spiritual journey gets fast-tracked. Because it is the first experience of the impermanence of life. Now, in your case, the prarabdha karma has resulted in the deaths you have seen at such a young age, all the experiences you have been through. But that is what has also made you aware. And that journey is the journey that has to be trusted. All your feelings have to be accepted, even your feeling for companionship. What is wrong with that feeling? Why should one feel, oh, I should not be feeling this because that means I'm dependent on someone to be loved. So what? Isn't that what arises naturally? Allow it to arise. If the loved one does not manifest, be disappointed. Allow that to arise. You see, this is an all-embracing teaching. Nothing is rejected. There is no, you should be this way, you should not be that way. And let me tell you, nobody is alone. You know why? Because everyone has to deal with themselves. You may be alone physically, but there are many people who are with others and are yet suffering. So, as the masters have said, if you cannot be with yourself, then you're not in very good company. So what you have expressed is so beautiful because it is the pain of life. It is the pain of life as it has happened. And to be grateful to God, that I have learned so much through my loss. It has brought me on the path of inquiry, of trying to understand and make sense of why has all this happened. What is it that it shows me? That is my learning. And that learning takes place in awareness, not in ignorance. So do not consider yourself alone in that sense, because obviously something has guided you on to the spiritual journey that is with you. And what is your true nature? What you started by asking, you have spoken on behalf of everyone, because everyone has been conditioned since birth. They don't know their true nature, but now with the gift of the teaching, what starts happening is the true nature starts emerging. Because why? When you accept everyone around you says things and does things based on their genetics and conditioning, you start accepting them the way they are. You are not concerned with what their true nature is and is not. As far as you are concerned, you now accept they are the way God has made them. And therefore, you accept you are the way God has made you. Now, supposing your natural instinct is to be quiet by yourself, and your conditioning has forced you out of that naturalness. It has forced you to be someone who you are not, because deep down you will know that now where I am today, do I prefer my own silence or do I prefer being out there and extroverted and talkative because I have been conditioned that. Deep down you know that. Now when you know that you are precisely the way God has made you, you will start allowing your true nature to express itself, because now you know there's nothing to hide. You see, this is what starts happening. You don't need to even know your true nature. Your true nature starts expressing itself because it is free of the bondage of doership. That I must do things to win approval, I must do things to get validation, which unfortunately for all of us are conditioned through our childhood. But the light of the spiritual teaching starts shining, and I cannot say it allows you to be who you are. It allows you to be as you are and to accept that you are precisely the way God has made you. What starts happening is you start becoming more and more comfortable with yourself and more comfortable with others. This is what starts happening. This is the second birth. This is what we spoke about two satsangs back, the dvij, the twice born. That birth has already happened. What you have asked is so beautiful that it could take up a whole satsang. Truly, at your age, to have even this much awareness, this much knowing of what you have seen, do consider it as a gift also. That is why my teacher would say, don't consider your glass half empty, consider it half full. If God has brought you here so far, why do you think He will drop you here? He will take you home. Have faith, not in a positive outcome. Faith that whatever happens is God's will. Suffering, pain in the moment is part of that. Some people have been gifted enormous pain. I know a family where each member of the family has suffered a serious illness, if not two. The parents, then the children, and the children's children, and the spouses. Hardwired health karma. Why? How can one ever know? But the learning is there. Whatever comes to you comes unasked. That is what Maharaj said. Whatever comes to you comes unasked. And so it means it is meant for you. Pleasure or pain. So if you do feel drawn to come again on this satsang, you're more than welcome. I've enjoyed talking to you. I couldn't even say enjoyed. It gives me great joy rather for someone who is actually facing life's challenges, enormous challenges, and yet expressing herself through art like you are, which is beautiful. That is your outlet. That is your creativity. And I would be more than happy to carry this investigation further with you. Okay?
Is there any way to connect with you?
We are connecting now. Yeah, okay. But you can send an email to the website. Okay. You're more than welcome. How did you find this talk? I mean, were you looking for something or?
I have been into spiritual readings and books since I lost my mom, which was very sudden. It was not out of an illness, but it was sudden brain hemorrhage one day. And since then, I have been reading Alan Watts, Eckhart Tolle, Ramana Maharshi. I've been sitting and meditating. I've been in surrender. And then I let go of the pain. But then the death of the sibling, who was very young, he was just 19. And the worst part was that it was very violent. It was like, it still gives me nightmares. Sometimes I wake up and there was a lot of guilt because it was a suicide. Till date, I feel traumatized that maybe I should have done something else. But then there was this understanding after reading all these books and all that it was destiny. I sometimes felt bad that he couldn't even enjoy life. He couldn't, this might sound silly, but the first time I took a flight, I started crying because I thought that my brother never got to experience a flight or so many experiences. He never got to experience what life is like. But then there was this letting go that this is how it was meant to be. The loss of mom, the loss of brother, estrangement from dad. It was supposed to be this way. It's happening for a reason which I might not understand right now. But the best I can do is just see that life is happening for me. Like, how can I make the best out of this? And just keep going on and find that strength within me. So sometimes I just like sit silently. If there is pain, I just let it go. I just cry. But mostly I try to be in that state where I'm just in acceptance and surrender that it's all working out for me. And all of your talks have been so, so helpful. They're very soothing to me. Even when I'm painting, I'll just put something in the background, some talk or something. And some of the lines and everything are so meditative that I just pause everything and I sit with that particular line. And even today's talk about surrender was very helpful because it made me realize that it's not my will, but his will is being done since the very beginning of life. And that's why I can't be grateful enough. Thank you.
Okay, and one last thing is, even when acceptance is not there, even that should be accepted. This is the main thing. We are not looking for picture perfect life. Uh-huh. Even when acceptance is not there, because there is bound to be, you've been through enormous suffering. So even that should be accepted.
Okay.
Okay, take care.
Okay.
Do we have time or we have one or two questions? Yes, James. Sorry, I think you're freezing up there.
No? No video?
Yes.
Now you can hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. I make documentary films about social issues.
I can't see you, James.
If I turn on the video, then I think the sound will go away.
No, I think as long as you don't move too much, the sound is stable. Let's try.
I make documentary films about social issues. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. And they come to me for the ways that many ways that you've described, they just come to me. But they take years, or they have taken years and years of efforts. The last project I worked on took 8 years, I think, maybe longer. And that took a lot of doership. And I'm a little confused about when you say things come to you naturally. Yes, I can see how these projects came to me and they were blessings in terms of the opportunity that I believe the messages that they were able to bring about people who are challenged, whether children with AIDS or children.
I think we've lost you again, so. Yeah.
So how does doership is something that seems to be so important to getting films made. How do I distinguish between doership and non-doership in something that takes so much effort?
Very nice question, James. And I can relate to what you're saying because I had worked on a project which was a tarot deck, the Sacred India Tarot, which took 12 years to make. So, you see, the main thing is, when a project is meant to be, it happens. There are so many forces which come together that our doership is just one part of that, which is more a mechanism of completing the project. So by all means, the effort is there. But as Aurobindo said, meditation is for the inner journey. That is fine. But most of us are living and working. And meditation at work, to bring the quality of meditation to our work, is what is required. And when that happens, when you know deep down that I have been gifted by attributes which have allowed me to be a filmmaker, the universe is supporting this project through various means, then the thing of I am doing it for 8 years starts moving aside. and it gets replaced with it is happening because it is meant to happen, and what is meant to happen is my effort also is part of the happening. That effort is meant to happen. So therefore, it is not my effort. Now, I'll explain this in clearer terms. The tarot deck, which I mentioned, I'm not an expert in tarot. I don't know if everyone knows about tarot. But in India, someone came to me, my friend Rohit came to me with, he had studied the tarot extensively. And he said, Gautam, I have mapped, perhaps for the first time, I have mapped the tarot structure onto Indian mythology, which has never been done before. And I feel it is an immense contribution to Indian mythology as well as the science of tarot. Now, you can imagine if I started thinking, how will we pull this off with effort? And I asked him, what do you want me to do? He said, I want your help in finding an artist who is not Indian, because they will most likely not know the tarot. I want someone who knows not only tarot, but esoteric sciences like the Kabbalah and this and that, as well as Indian mythology. Now, can you imagine the effort I would have to expend to find someone? What happened was, in the year 2001, I went to London. I met a man called Alan Jacobs. He was the head of the Ramana Maharshi Foundation UK. He recently passed away. I met him for a book of Ramesh Balsekar's. He was representing a UK publisher, and they wanted the rights to the book. And at the dinner was Jane, who was sitting next to him quietly. And so I asked her what she did, and she said, I'm an artist. And I said, oh, really? I said, are you familiar with Indian mythology? She said, very much. I said, are you familiar with the tarot? She said, of course. So I went to the studio, and I saw how the universe had just produced Jane for me without any effort of mine so far. And I asked her, I said, look, there's this project, and we have no money. We've just created a publishing house. But would you like to come on board? And James, do you know what? She of course said yes. It took us 12 years to produce the deck of 82 cards. 12 years of effort. What was that effort? The effort was Rohit would find references in classical mythology. He wanted the drawings a certain way. Those days we had fax machines. We would fax the drawings across to Jane. It was Jane's effort to do the drawings. She would see the constellations and do the drawings according to the position of the planets and all that. Effort, 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 effort. But the fact is that the 12-year journey could not have happened unless it was God's will. One of them could have backed out of the project. I could have run out of money, and so on and so forth. So whose effort is it? More importantly, it was never a burden. It was a joy. Everyone felt there was an immense contribution happening. There was motivation. And let me tell you that both of them went through the cycle of the tarot, which is like a full wheel, you know, the ups and downs and highs and lows. 12 years is enough in anyone's lifespan to see a lot in life. Even that happened. And at the end of 12 years, I said, bloody hell, now the deck is ready and I have no money to produce it. You see, even the money came. So this question of effort is, as a function of daily living, we put in the effort, but that putting in of that effort can only happen if it is God's will. And therefore, it is not my effort. When I am true to myself and I look back, I mean, you think for yourself, your health could have failed and not taken you through those 8 years. So whose effort is it? It is a body, mind, organism's effort, which was expended because it was meant to be expended to make those films. It would not have happened if it wasn't God's will. Therefore, it may appear to be my effort, but truly, it is not.
I'll really try to remember that every day.
Remembering that is you won't then have disappointments, because things don't work out the way you want them to work out. Relax. That disappointment may arise, but ultimately it was never in my control.
I feel totally blessed just to be doing what I'm doing. And just to tell you, you asked how that someone found you. Someone sent me to see a talk, and I was so excited because I found you. And it turns out that's not the person that we were sending me to. Uh-huh. So here we are.
And you might meet someone else now, and you might say, he was not the person that was me.
You were definitely the person I was looking for. Thank you for everything.
Okay.
And Shri Ganesha.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, is Harish there? I think I saw Harish here. Okay, he's not there. Jayashri. Last question, Jayashri.
Gautamji.
Yes.
I'm so afraid of asking my question because you are so realized. And please ignore if I make any mistake while asking my question.
I don't even know if I am realized, so don't worry about that.
Okay. So in your talks, you have mentioned once, like in Sai Baba Devotee Speaks, the significance of the living master. So that was one of my questions. And one more is, when you say meditation is contemplating on the consciousness, what do you mean? And even Osho says, play with your mind. So there are many ways of meditation, like some say close your eyes and meditate, some say open your eyes and meditate, some say let the free flow of mind be there and you will get the silence eventually. But some say, just sit and not allow your thoughts to come in between. So what's your take on that? And thanks for this opportunity.
Well, not at all. You know, this is what happens when there are too many some says. Some say this, some say that, some say that. And the mind gets confused. You see? Meditation, in a nutshell, for, you can say, for this path, for those who are drawn to this path, is witnessing whatever arises in consciousness. That is all. It is simple. That witnessing of whatever arises in consciousness, whatever thoughts arise, means those thoughts are not judged as good or bad and not labeled. They are allowed, just as one sees traffic going by on the street. That is it. If that appeals to you, you will know. And if not, you have to see what other masters say, what is their definition of meditation, and whether that appeals to you. So that is the meditation question. And your first question about, is a master necessary? If you ask me, in my case, it was necessary. I cannot speak for others. But if you ask Sai Baba of Shirdi, if you ask Ramana Maharshi of Tiruvannamalai, if you ask Nisargadatta Maharaj of Mumbai, they all have said that the Guru is needed to point one back to the Sadguru. Because a transmission takes place, a certain transmission takes place. As I said last time, Sai Baba himself had two gurus. Do you know even the Buddha had two gurus? But they were so great that they told the Buddha that he has superseded them and they have been inadequate for him. But even he had two gurus. So I hope that answers your question. But deep down, you have to take a decision. You know this. Okay? I think we can stop for now. I'll just change the view so I can see all of you. And I get quite tickled when I get emails which say, I think I have surrendered. Because if you think you have surrendered, you have not surrendered. This is very important. I don't mean it lightly. For someone like Priyam, who has seen so much in life, what choice is there? Surrender sets one free. You feel light. You feel unburdened. You feel relieved. You don't feel despondent. You don't feel someone has dragged you into a prison cell and tied you with chains. A burden is lifted from your shoulders. Lord, all that has happened is your will. All that will happen is your will. All that will not happen, no matter how hard I try, is your will. How many breaths I have left in this life is your will. How many ups and downs I am still to see is your will. What can change is my attitude to life and what life brings. And that is your will. All successes and failures is your will. Before we leave, I would like to thank the volunteers who have been a big help with various tasks. Purnoor, Rajesh, Laura, Oksana, Divya, Sangeeta, they are helping with transcribing these talks, with editing, with the website. Some more tasks need to be done. The list is there on the website in the Contact Us page. If it appeals to you, if you feel you have skill sets to help with those, please go through that list. It gives me much pleasure to know that the teaching is spreading and impacting people. And that can only happen if it is meant to happen. There are other volunteers as well, whom I will mention next time. It is a time of tremendous uncertainty. Still, even here in Mumbai, with the restrictions on work, with the environment, it is a tremendous opportunity to be immersed in the inner journey, since there is very little movement allowed on the outer journey right now. Be well, take care of yourselves, of your loved ones, and even those you don't like.